We had people that were born there. We have relatives that are buried there. Yet we filed for land when the appropriate time was supposed to file for re-ownership. And so far, we haven't received anything. The federal government claims that they have no record of us even filing to date. And I was wondering, to your knowledge, do we still have a chance to retain that land? We still use it, we still live it, we still consider it ours, and we're still filing. We file every year. Every year they come out with some new deal. We still file every year.
Yeah. I'm not in a position to give you any kind of detailed legal advice, but let me ask you a few questions about your situation. Is it your understanding that you yourself or somebody else in your family filed an allotment application back before 1971?
Yes, we filed before that too.
Okay. And you're saying that the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Bureau of Land Management have no record of that application?
Yeah, we got the receipts of filing and sending certified letters. We have the receipts for that.
Do you know whether the application is in fact filed in the Bureau of Land Management today?
Yes, it's supposed to be filed there in the Bureau of Land Management. They're supposed to have records of it in Juneau and also in Anchorage, but the people up there claim they haven't received nothing. We probably were better qualified than the Shields, because I know them personally, and I can't say what they're doing is wrong, but I think we had to have precedence over them, because we live and we have people buried on our lands.
Well, it's not really a question of having precedence over other applicants. It's a question of your relationship with the United States government that's at issue. And were you the applicant, or was one of your family members?
We're all applicants. So there's about 300 of us in our family, and we're all applicants.
Yeah. So you yourself have an application?
Yes, I do.
Well, what I would suggest you do is check with either the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Juneau or Alaska Legal Services Corporation in Juneau or Ketchikan, depending on which place is closer to your land, and find out what has become of your claim. The Shields case, which I just mentioned, may have eliminated your claim unless one of the applicants in your family used the land before the forest was withdrawn. If you have a very old family member who applied for an allotment on land that was used before the forest was established there, then maybe that claim is still alive. If everybody who applied for an allotment began his or her use after the forest was established, then you may be covered by the Shields case, and your claim may have been eliminated through that litigation. I would suggest very strongly that you check either with BIA or with Alaska Legal Services in Ketchikan or Juneau.
Yeah, because what I'm trying to establish that my forefathers been on that land before even the word Russian was heard in Alaska.
Yeah.
We're there first.
That's what's tragic about these situations. Do you know whether the land is part of a village corporation selection?
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's not.
But it's in the Tongass Forest.
Yes, it is.
Well, Mr. O'Leary's recommendation is designed to deal with that type of case, as I understand it.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to have a word with you before you leave.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. O'Leary. I think everybody appreciates your advice. Could you leave that with us by any chance?
Well, these are illegible notes. I'd be happy to supply typewritten testimony at a
well,
later time.
Well, if you'd just like to, I'm just thinking of the typist who does this, and we'd just hand it on to her.
Yeah, very few sections of the testimony I gave were verbatim from these pages,
okay.
Although I was looking at them at the time.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Well, maybe this is a good time to take a break for a cup of coffee, and then we'll reconvene in 5 or 10 minutes and see who else wants to speak.
Hello.
I've been asked to make an announcement about the dance tonight. The Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska Washington chapter will have a dance here at the VFW Hall tonight from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. Everyone 21 years and older is welcome. Bring your own bottle, live music. $6 per person. Mixers and ice will be available. Well, we've got a little more time this afternoon, and we've had so far here in Seattle, we've had 53 people testifying. We have a little more time this afternoon, so if anyone else who hasn't had a chance to speak would like to say something, this might be a good time.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ron Haley. I'm a Corridor, Alaska native, and I own shares, 100 shares with Sea Alaska Corporation, at large. Rather than ask questions today, I think I'm just going to express my feelings involved with this. I started hearing stories about the Great Alaska Land Claim Settlement Act as a child. The stories came down from my parents, my mother, who came down from her father. Most of those Alaska Natives are no longer with us. And we hear a lot about preserving this for the generations to come. Needless to say, I'm one of those grandchildren that came along while we were in waiting. There's a big issue here. We're really at a very big crossroad. And the point that I want to make here today is, should we lose it all or should we hang on to something? Giving no one a fault, I think the government has done more than an adequate job of raping the land of the Alaska Natives. First, not only taking the land, but second, getting the Alaska Natives involved in something that was way over our heads. Consequently, 15 years after the Settlement Act is passed, there is quite a turmoil for everybody. And something needs to be done. Now, rather than point the finger to any one person, I think it's not a matter of who we should blame. I think it's a matter of what should we do to continue this, to further it. If anything, I think we need to stand on the land. And a lot of the Alaska Natives who have filed for allotments, it's a sad situation. And if we lose the land, if the Alaska Natives lose the land, then there won't be anything left to remember anything ever happened. And I think back to my grandfather and his grandfather and all of the promises that were made. And it seems like so many years to lose everything in 15 or 20 years. That's a long time. And I think the decisions that have to be made have to be spoke out. Congress is not going to hear anything from the at-large shareholders, not unless we speak up. And so, We're at the turn point, folks. This is it. We either speak up here or do something about this, or there's not going to be anything left to do anything about. And I think it's time to all stand in unison here And sure, we can point the fingers, but I don't think that's the answer. That's not the solution. The problem is already here. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Haley. Sure.
My name is Joan Bunton. I was born in South Naknek and lived in Anchorage when I was a teenager, and then came down to Seattle. I'm an engineer, and I've just completed a Master of Public Health in hopes of going back up to Alaska and to serve some of my family. I have to explain to you about my family. My grandmother Carrie was full blood, but like many women in those days, Carrie had two husbands. Carrie's first husband was full blood. She had a daughter who then married a full blood, so all the cousins on that side are full blood. Carrie's second husband was my grandfather from Sweden, and my mother married a man from Sweden, so all of us on this side are a quarter, so we're a typical Alaska family of all mixed bloods. I'm not quite sure what this is, but I do want to express my views, and a little latently. As I understand it, I belong to Bristol Bay, we got a $10,000 payoff over the years, 7 years. And when I would ask about this, they would say, well, we gave it to the natives in little dribbles. This is what I was told, I know this is not true, because Alaska Native, if they get a lump sum, they'll just go out and drink it up and they'll have nothing. This way, if we give it to them a dribble at a time, they will still have a little bit, which is a bunch of baloney. If I had gotten my 10,000 lump sum 7-8 years ago, I'd be well off by now. And I think a lot of other people would too. I think, and the other thing that I have, this is against my own corporation, this is none of the others, I've observed Cook Inlet. Cook Inlet always drew on their brightest and their best. No matter what, they're brightest and they're best and they're doing very well. The place I'm from, too much political infighting, too much let's not hire the bright people because they're going to show us up, we'll lose our jobs. And consequently, a lot of what they're losing is because of political infighting. Also, the industries they're going into. Sure, hotel businesses are very high risk businesses. Fish canneries, you know fish canneries, but what's the profit margin there? They just did not seem to ever get hold of what was happening. And to go into some surefire businesses, some small businesses that would make work, and something like sewer pipes, sewer fittings, you could export them high profit margins. But anyway, by the way, I'm going to Chamberlain, South Dakota, where I'll be directing a hospital and a clinic there. The same old story, the Alaskans don't want me back, I'm too well educated and too capable, and a woman, horror of horrors. That is the biggest, but fortunately there are some Native American groups that have been wining and dining me. And as far as 1995, I say, give them to us, let us sell those suckers. You know, let us get what little money we have left and invest it ourselves. I think we are capable as individuals and outsiders. Enough of this homeland and land. My mother and my relatives stayed up there, and they're in the villages. And hey, they've got less than I have from the outside. So your apple pie and motherhood was kind of a nice story, but it just doesn't cut it. The Alaska Natives, if you recall back when they went to Congress to fight for the land claims, the Alaskans were going to lose it anyway. The reason for fighting for the land claims was to try to get a little. So that's what they did get, a very little. They imposed a white man's system on a native culture. It was destined for failure from the beginning. And the corporations were not smart enough to draw from many people here who are well educated and who are part Native American. My little girl is cracking up. She says, my mother, the activist. No. That's my hospital. That's something different. Okay. And so that's my testimony. I think there is a lot of propaganda about the land and keeping it for natives. Hey, they're just going to keep it up there long enough tell every, so that people have jobs up there. And they're nice trips, by the way. and they're nice trips and everything else. That's what I objected to. I would go every year faithfully to the Bristol Bay meeting where we could talk to the stockholders, and they'd come down. And it was a big luau where they were totally unavailable to ask questions, to say anything. They'd get out and dance and take their clothes half off. And that was about the extent of it. But we didn't get anything back from there. I say, take your little bit of money, invest it in real estate, put it in 3 months securities. You'll be far better off 20 years hence than you're going to be leaving it up there with those, quote, bureaucrats. Now you can ask me questions.
No, that's fine.
Is that all?
Well, that's all, yes. I think we know where you stand. I don't need to ask any questions.
Hello. You're Thomas
Berger.
My name is Antoinette Helmer. I'm a Haida before land claims. I'm a Haida now that land claims is here. And I will be a Haida after the land claims. No piece of paper or law can ever change that fact. I am eagle and frog. That tells me my family lineage. It tells me many things about my people. I don't like this land claims. I don't like it at all. I don't like what I see. It was supposed to be a fair and just settlement. But I wonder, fair and just to who? The settlement was for compensation for land given up and damage to lands retained. Some thought. But it was really just another scheme to get our land, creating another social crisis for our already divided families. The land claims is for extermination. It tells us to assimilate, separate, and integrate. It tells us that the only good Indian is a non-Indian. I think the greatest mistake that Indian people have made is to remain silent for so long. The Act says that it was designed not to create a permanently defined racial institution. It is an extermination act. This is genocide. I believe this because they said the corporations, the regional corporations, have guardianship-like role with respect to village corporations because it is easier to take land away when all subsurface rights remain in the regional control. What the settlement would mean in the lives of Alaska Natives would depend upon the meaning given to it by the Natives themselves. This is what we were told. Land claims has been tainted by the meaning given it by non-Natives. The dream of self-determination, the dream of Native determination, has turned into a nightmare of non-Native determination. Making a profit for shareholders is a fundamental obligation of all corporations. I wonder what profit is. Profit to non-natives means money. Profit to natives means a good life derived from the land and the sea. That's what we're all about. That's what this land claims was all about. Living off the land and sea is not only traditional, but owing to the scarcity of cash income, it is required for our families to survive. Congress recognized this fact when they said that existing traditional subsistence uses of renewable resources will be permitted until it is demonstrated by the Secretary of the Interior that utilization of these resources is neither economically or physically necessary to maintain human life, nor necessary to provide opportunities for survival of Alaskan cultures centering on subsistence as a way of life. In The Shareholder, some time back, a board member of Sea Alaska said, "Our entry into the fishing industries is not only important, it is vital, a vital state resource, but because it is one in which many of our shareholders can identify and support." This is true. Our people look at the fishing industry in two ways. Many of them look at it as a subsistence resource. That's the majority, for the majority of the people. And then some of them look at our fishing industry as a commercial resource. The original concept of the land claims was preservation of our land and our culture, not exploitation of our land and culture. Emil Nadi, who was president of the AFN in 1970, said, "Without land, the Alaska Native people would be as Jewish people were before the nation of Israel was created for them." This is true. Why can't we own this land like we always have? Why must we be something we aren't? I am not a non-Indian. I don't want to be one. I had my chance years ago. As a child, in an intensified assimilation program called foster care, it's been a long road home. I am Haida. I can be nothing else. Now that I know who I am, I find they want to take it from me. The white man's way is divide and conquer. They look, it's survival of the fittest, and it's an individualism concept. The Native way is that we look for the common good and the unity of our people. The tribes are not just a bunch of people who have decided to come together. Tribes are an intricate web of family ties. I read a book called Letters to Howard, and Fred Big Jim said, "The act will not bring true self-determination. It is really one more step in the plan for termination of the Native way of life in Alaska, and I believe this. Termination means genocide. Native determination would be freedom from governmental control over decision-making. This is the basic principle of the Settlement Act. The act said that it was being made in real, in the true conformity with the real economic and social needs of the people. What are the real economic needs of the people? You yourself said, and I heard you last night, that the people who still live on the land require subsistence as a means of survival. If we are not allowed to continue in our own sovereign ways like other people, this U.S. government will demonstrate to the world at large their unwillingness or maybe their inability to deal fairly and justly with foreign nations." In 1972, corporations many of the people, this was after the act was passed, and in discussions amongst the people about the purpose of the act, they felt that the corporations had an extra burden that most of the world's profit-making corporations did not have. Broadly said, the other goals include expanding employment opportunities, protecting the environment, maintaining subsistence resources, and preserving the native way of life. Problems, social problems that were listed in the Tundra Times concerning natives was that they had problems with inadequate education, poor health care, substandard housing, discrimination, lack of employment opportunities. These things still exist 15 years later. In the Shareholder in May 1977, a board member said that it was that shareholders had an unrealistic expectation that the corporation should provide for social service. And yet the act said that it was made in conformity with the real economic and social needs of the people. Our own people that are running these corporations tell us that we are wrong to expect them to address our social needs. And yet that's supposed to be a purpose of the act. With employment, and we still have to deal with discrimination in employment in our own companies as well as others. And I have learned through the years that an Indian has to work twice as hard to be considered half as good. I believe that our economic and social problems have been used against us once again. The white people embrace our culture, but not our people. I have some true concerns that they have tied my heritage to business. The Alaska Corporation uses as their local symbol Eagle Raven. Eagle Raven to the white man is an interesting symbol. To me, it tells me where I belong and who I belong to. It tells me that we go back a long, long ways. I am dismayed to hear board members that I have talked to in February of 1985 saying that our land is nothing but a big tree farm. Our culture comes from that land. That's how we define ourselves as people. That's where we derive our identity. I also heard shareholders speaking in February, and they made comments like, who wants to protect the land for nothing? What are we protecting the land for? Our stock will be nothing, will be worth nothing if we include the new natives. Those are not Indian people speaking. I'm really distressed to hear that kind of talk. I don't like this land claims. I don't think I ever will. We did not fight to keep 40 million acres of our heritage rights to become non-natives, like the white man's law proposes. It is a law which tells us we must conduct our lives like the white man. We are expected to become exploiters of our heritage rights and to divide. I don't like this land claims. I am Haida. I have always been, I will always be. You cannot take that away from me. I wonder about the future of Aboriginal descendants. I have seen many changes in the way the people view the settlement as the years whiz towards 1991. I will share some of my experience with you because it reflects my growing concern. Please bear with me as I attempt to speak from my heart about my land claims experience. I was your typical know-it-all youth in 1971, who was attempting to build a life in the midst of turmoil. It was the usual nickel and dime sort of survival, the journeys long and the mountains steep. One day, out of the blue, my mother sent a letter telling me we had to register for something called land claims, and the forms arrived. My aunt sent me the family tree information, and I filled out the forms. I did my best to be honest and accurate, as my entire family did. As a result of our combined efforts, my mother and three brothers belong to one village corporation, and my sister and I and our three children belong to at-large only. We do not know why this has happened. All of the children in our family born after 1971 are not registered members of the land claims. Here we are, close family, and we are divided. My sister and her son belonged to the village corporation for 10 years, the same one that my mother and my three brothers belonged to, but she was transferred to at large in 1981 for some unknown reason no one will tell. In 1980, my mother was quoted a five-figure price for her promised 160-acre parcel if she would sell in 1991. This offer was made by a board member. She doesn't even have title yet, and already the vultures descend. I don't understand why no one questions the 160-acre figure. By my rough calculations, 100,000 people divided into 40 million acres is 400 acres of land, not 160. This makes me wonder. The U.S. government has a rich history of stealing Native American land in 160-acre parcels for centuries now. You would think that Aboriginal descendants in Alaska would learn from their lower 48 counterparts about the deceitful ways of the white man who encourages Aboriginal peoples to divide the sacred land so he can steal it back 160 acres at a time. I just don't understand our blindness. In 1974, I received my first check, an unexpected and much appreciated windfall. I didn't have to do anything to earn it. I felt rich. The money was gone in no time due to my real economic reality. I had a ball spending it. I looked forward to more of the same, and I wasn't disappointed. I liked my $1,000 spending spree best. After that, the checks got smaller, but they never ceased giving me a thrill. I always found a use for the cash, and it never stayed with me for very long. I began to hear stories of increased deaths among the people when the checks came, and I wondered. When I started attending meetings, I listened to the voices of the people demanding more cash and benefits. I told myself it was okay. After all, the people were needy, and the promise of more was enticing. The corporations began to crumble one by one, dividing the haves from the have-nots. Stories of huge payments to village shareholders who profited from the rape of the land around their villages began to creep into the Moccasin Trail. Envy was my reality for months. How I wish I could know such wealth. I, who grew up on welfare, wished for the knowledge of wealthy living. My dreams were grand indeed. But I did not have that experience, thank God. Others did. In time, their sad tales came to light. Some died. Some became destitute in spirit. They all lost more than they gained. How could that be, I asked myself. At the time, I told myself I would have handled it better than those I heard about, but now I know myself. And I wouldn't have handled it any better, because I am really no different from the other human beings I share this experience with. Something is wrong with land claims. I wondered, but I didn't look deeper for a while longer. When my wonder overwhelmed me, I began to look deeper. I did not like what I found. When I first read land claims, I said, right on, it seems simple enough, $1 billion and 40 million acres of land. I heard about corporations, but I did not know, nor do I know, corporations. All our Aboriginal people of Alaska started with 100 shares each. Now some have more than others due to deaths. All children born after 1971 aren't included from enrollment and participation. We were first divided into 13 corporations and then divided further into village corporations. Families were divided according to some formula developed by the BIA, not by us. We know who our close family members are. Leaders are chosen by popularity votes, and success and profit is measured by cash flow. There was a time in our history when profit was measured by survival, and Mother Earth's bounty and wealth was measured by how much you gave rather than how much you received. We now sacrifice our culture for economic development. We have always been wealthy. It is only since land claims that our wealth has declined. The land we hold in trust is our wealth. It is the only wealth we could possibly pass on to our children. Good old Mother Earth, with all her bounty and rich culture we have developed from her treasures, is our wealth. Without our homelands, we become true paupers. If we adopt the ways of the white man and disrespect our Mother Earth by taking without giving, we doom our grandchildren to a life without purpose, without meaning. This strange land claims trail won't go away. Thrust on an ignorant and helpless me, I did not know. I did not know the discipline of learning, of earning my keep, and was intrigued with the idea of receiving something for nothing. My ignorance got me 30 pieces of silver as payment for wealth beyond my imagining. How stupid I was to believe I was getting something for nothing, when really I was getting nothing for something. It's not easy to be Aboriginal these days since the guests from foreign lands arrived. They refuse to understand that we hold in trust for our children the use of Mother Earth's garden. If we do not tend to our garden with nurturing strokes, she will not produce for our survival needs. That is the supreme law. Thank you for this opportunity.
Honorable Mr. Berger, ladies and gentlemen, Alaska Native shareholders, it's a privilege to address this Alaska Native Review Commission. My name is Billy B. Johnson. I am an Eskimo, born in Nome, Alaska. I own 100 shares in Cook Inlet. I own 100 shares of stock in the Bering Straits, and I own 100 shares in the 13th Regional Corporation. I have been on the board of directors of the 13th Regional Corporation since its inception. The Native Review Commission is an independent
a condition agreed to when Judge Berger accepted his appointment under terms of reference. The commission is to examine and report on 5 items. There are 2 items that concern me. The history and intent of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. It was for the fair settlement and extinguishment of Aboriginal rights of the Alaska Natives. Acting officially for the 13th Regional Corporation as a chairman of the Land Committee, in 1977, I entered a bill in Congress, H.R. 12547, asking for land for the 13th. Testimony was taken, and those opposing land for the 13th were the 12 regional corporations, the State of Alaska, Department of Interior, Bureau of Indian Affairs, Bureau of Land Management, and there were others. Again, 2 years later, I entered another bill. It was a compromise, and it was Bill H.R. 4300. Both bills died in Congress. All I was asking for was that the Alaska Natives belonging to the 13th region be given a fair share of Alaska land. Since that time, the federal government was awarded over 100 million acres of Alaska land to be put into 4 wilderness systems. And the state of Alaska was awarded approximately 50 million more. All I wanted was our share. As for the shares that I own in some of the other 12 regional corporations, someday I would like to go back to Alaska to live off the land as I did as a child. I'd like to have my wife Janice and my children enjoy it and leave it in the future generations' hands. I want Alaska land to be retained and remain in the control of Alaska Natives forever, whether it be in or through the Indian Reorganization Act or any other method that is deemed fair and just by those they choose to make these decisions for them. Thank you, Mr. Berger. It was a privilege.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
My name is Frances Krauss, and I'm from Cake, Alaska, originally. I first came to Seattle in 1953, and the reason I came down was because, not because I wanted to give up my homeland, but because I wanted to further my education because it wasn't available in Alaska. My fondest dream as a child was to become a registered nurse. All my school years were spending taking science classes. There was nothing else I wanted more. I had to be a registered nurse. So I came down to Seattle to attend the University of Washington. And at that time, there was no money available. I could only go on the money I earned. We didn't have the BIA money. We didn't have the TNH money. We couldn't apply to Sea Alaska for educational grants, and we didn't even have anything from AMB. We didn't have the privileges the children had today. It really upsets me that we were ambitious. We worked hard. We worked our buns off because we wanted to further our education. And yet, when we got it, when we finally received our education, we had nowhere to go because our villages had nothing to offer us. There was no hospital or whatever. Even if had I become a nurse, I would not have been able to go back to my homeland. And there are people in this place here today that are lawyers, they're business people. Can you find a job in your original village? Will they take you back? Right now, they won't even, they're saying you don't belong in Sea Alaska. They want to cut you off on your land. That really upsets me. We didn't leave because we wanted to. We wanted to prove our status. My children are the same way. I came down to Seattle because, like I said, I wanted to improve my education. I got married instead, and I have 5 children. And when we had to decide whether we should go to 13th region or stay in Sea Alaska and stay at large, my children, I was custodian for them. That was the hardest decision I ever had to make in my life. I had to decide, do I dare make this? Because what happens when they get older? They don't have the they didn't have the option to decide if they should stay or not. It was mine. And today, all they say is, well, big deal. They didn't want us in it anyway. The Alaskans, they act like we don't even belong there. And yet we were born up there. I was born in Alaska. My parents lived up there forever. And if you deny that, you might as well forgive up. Just give up everything. I believe in the land, not because of what it can get me, but because eventually I will go up there. The only reason I have land in Alaska is because I inherited it from my parents. I also inherited land and some Sea Alaska shares. I am in a unique position like Billy Johnson. I belong to 13th region and I belong to Sea Alaska. And it just, I would have preferred to stay in Sea Alaska.